And we're going to talk about the great late Martin Luther King Jr. and his struggle with severe depression and suicidal thoughts at a young age. And then we're going to also talk about the times that we're living in. And I think that this clip that we're about to play with Martin Luther King being interviewed by NBC will sum it up. It's about a 1 minute clip, and then we're going to go ahead and get right into the conversation. So let me go ahead and play this.
You can't thingify anything without depersonalizing that something. If you use something as a means to an end, at that moment you make it a thing and you depersonalize it. The fact is that the Negro was a slave in this country for 244 years. That act, that was a willful thing that was done. The Negro was brought here in chains, treated in very inhuman fashion. And this led to the thingification of the Negro. So he was not looked upon as a person. He was not looked upon as a human being with the same status and worth as other human beings. And the other thing is that human beings cannot continue to do wrong without eventually rationalizing that wrong. So slavery was justified morally, biologically, theoretically, scientifically, everything else. And it seems to me that white America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. And that can never be overlooked. So I think these things are absolutely necessary. The other thing is that America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, They don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps. But it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading. But I must confess that that dream that I had that day has at many points turned into a nightmare. Now, I'm not one to lose hope. I keep on hoping. I still have faith in the future. But I've had to analyze many things over the last few years, and I would say over the last few months. I've gone through a lot of soul searching and agonizing moments. And I've come to see that we have many more difficult days ahead, and some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism. And I think the realistic fact is that we still have a long, long way to go.
Now, let's just go ahead and get into it. First of all, starting off with you all, what would you say about Martin Luther King and the depression that he suffered and the suicidal thoughts that he had at a young age and those that young people have today?
That's a lot to unpack.
Talk about this, right?
Right? That's
so many layers.
Right.
I had to put y'all in the hot seat. That's why the program is for. We got to get into it.
I'm in a hot seat.
So go ahead, Dr. Schwartz.
A thought that came to mind as he was speaking and sharing what Dr. Martin Luther King was talking about in terms of integrating into a burning building, like his feeling that, hey, I've spent a good trajectory of my life trying to help my people be equal to or equaled with white people. And now I think maybe that wasn't the right thing. Interestingly, that revelation came after he met with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but I think that's another piece for our later discussion. But the thing that came to mind is something that is stressed within Association of Black Psychologists and a lot of the scholarships that is written, especially with Dr. Wade Nobles, Naeem Akbar, and so forth, that basically our illness as a people, that our illness is due to our assimilation into the mind of our oppressors, essentially. And when he was sharing what Dr. Martin Luther King was saying, it made me think about that and how I wonder if there was some sort of awareness of that when he made that statement, if there was some awareness that we're again, coming into the mind of our oppressor, for us, it's more illness, it's more stress. But we'll never be what we're not. And we're in a world that requires us to be something that we're not in order to be accepted. So there's this eternal, effort to get away from yourself when you're in that space, versus, which the other side of that he didn't say, was he began to think toward the ideology of separation, is where he was in those later stages of his development. And the he I'm referring to is Dr. Martin Luther King. He began to think towards separation. So,
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I think the evolution is that understanding that it's not just assimilation, but it's also kind of having your own independence in this environment. There may be, room to certainly debate that. But when you talk about suicidal ideation and you talk about depression, I think one of the things that we see very common is people then lose that sense of self, that self-identity, right? Everything in a very stereotypical way, everything becomes, catastrophized, and people, can't find their own way. But if we allow the patient, we allow the person to get back to kind of a reset point where they have some independence and they are able to say, this is who I am. This is how, I'm going to thrive, live in this situation. Then I think that gets a little bit better. And my understanding and my readings of King's messages and others, particularly towards the later stages, is the next step of that evolutionary process was finding for us as African Americans, as Blacks, finding our own independence in this kind of world, so to speak. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I like what both of you actually have stated, but I love what you stated, Sister Swift, because in Dynamic Therapy, there's a way word of talking about that, and that's an LI computation, which happens to be attached to the engram. And the LI computation is attached to the engram like a grandmother, a mother, or aunt. So the grandmother was an LI computation to his engram. That was the person that an LI computation is something that I can't live without it. It is needed in my life for me to survive. And if it goes away, either go away physically or pass away, I can no longer live without it. I can't live. That's the LI computation. His grandmother went away. So then he in turn felt like his life was no more value because his grandmother was his LI computation to his survival. That's what is taught in Oddity.
And I certainly always appreciate the kind of the different perspectives, right? Because, you know, how you define it, how I process it and conceptualize it of loss and of that grief, particularly during a time in history where, you know, we didn't have very many avenues for nurturance and support. You know, that's that loss is powerful. And I think for our viewers, people who go through significant loss, particularly if they think, you know, that's the linchpin, that's that spark or that's that nudge towards real depression and sometimes, you know, suicidal ideations.
Let me ask a question, bring in, Dr. McClure, did you want to say something real quick?
I was thinking about the, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
You can hear me? Okay. So I'm thinking broadly with Dr. King and the issue of always trying to understand what our identity is as individuals and as a people. And then I'm thinking about the broader context of our conversation about post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, we've said this previously that we're constantly trying to form our identities, understand who we are, but we're not quite post the trauma. So traumas are ongoing, as we've seen in the news over the last few weeks. And as the traumas are ongoing, our identities are always being formed in this ebb and flow and instability constantly. And so one of the thoughts I was putting forth is like spiritual and psychological grounding. There is a modality talked of emotional intelligence that talks about five areas of self-perception, self-expression, interpersonal skills, decision-making, and stress management. These five areas basically have 15 subsets underneath it, and it's all considered to be a composite of what wellness looks like. So once again, we're always trying to define wellness in the space of stability, instability, and our identity in terms of who we are. One caveat to that is when I look at my brother, I have an older and younger brother, but on our birth certificates, it has different racial groups, yet we all share the same parents. So my brother born in 1968, I believe he's considered Negro. I'm born in 1971. I'm considered Black, and my younger brother born in 1980 is considered African-American. So in one household, three brothers with three different quote unquote racial designations, we are still trying to fix who we are in terms of right. an identity. And in the midst of trauma and complicated trauma and complicated grief. And so I would imagine Dr. King is a part of that. He is not outside of that group. He's not outside of those modes of definition. So he experiences the same conflict and trauma that we all do in terms of identity. So I'm putting that forth as those five areas as a way to psychologically ground yourself between your self-perception, your decision-making, your problem-solving, but then to go deeper and to make sure you have a spiritual grounding because these waves that come to knock people over can knock over the strongest of people. And as you can see, Dr. King wrestled with this space. And there are really times where he's been knocked over. And I imagine there are other people in the horizon that have been knocked over by these experiences. But fortifying ourselves, we learn more about ourselves. We learn more in this process to ground ourselves spiritually. And spiritually and psychologically, these moments, as well as other modes, to just say, what are these forces that are going to ground me? Because the waves are always coming. And the more we can ground ourselves, we can find out what our identities actually look like individually and collectively.
Let me chime in on that. That's powerful. What you've all said has been pretty powerful just starting off this second hour. And I think that when we think about suicide and Sister Nicole, that was, you know, very enlightening, you know, going back to what, you know, may be the cause of these, because why do some have these suicidal thoughts and others don't? However, you know, when we look at today, you know, one of the things that you're saying, Dr. McClure, is so powerful, because when we think about young people today and the suicidal thoughts, there's so many dynamics that are at play here, and that you almost can't pin it down to just one thing. And I think this may be why Dr. Martin Luther King was saying that he feels that he's, you know, integrating his people into a burning house, because as you're saying, Dr. McClure, you know, this integration, we are not even able to really define ourselves. We're really being defined by external forces. And so now, you know, I just wonder, how does that play into the increasing suicide rate among young people today? You know, aside from just bullying, what are some other contributing factors that are taking place among young people?
Can I speak first? There are four dynamics that I stated earlier, which man has to survive in: self, group, sex, and then of course the human race in general. They need to be successful in these dynamics. There are engrams, which the one that I talked about, the contra survival engram, which lies across those dynamics, meaning that it is your, it's the engram that can actually, if it has an ally computation attached to it, can cause you to be suicidal and then be successful at it, where we have seen some are. We have suppressor. So when Martin Luther King talked about, I feel like I'm putting them in, you know, integrating them into the burning house, we put our children back in the hands of people that have treated us wrong from the time we stepped foot on this soil and made it okay for them to control every aspect, every dynamic of our lives. They control the self, they control the sex, they control the group, and they control the human race. We put our children right back there. That's a suppressor. We've just put them in the hands of a suppressor who sees no good in us accomplishing these four dynamics. You take a person, young children coming out of school, they don't even have, you know, you have the, what is called it, the prison, the school, the prison pipeline. You have these aspects going on. Our children don't understand that. They're in school, they're thinking they're supposed to learn how to be outside of school, how to function outside of school. They graduate from school and many of them find no one is trying to hire me. They don't understand. I'm an American. Mm-hmm. I'm Black. I'm African American. I'm whatever I'm going to be calling myself. I deserve to get a job. I went to school here. I was born in America. My mother paid taxes. I deserve to get a job and work. You have to survive across those four dynamics. You can't take care of your family. You're depressed. That's a man's job, to take care of his family. It's a man's job to survive for self. These are the four dynamics that are being messed with right now by society. It's a man's job to protect the human race, to be that defense in the human race. It's a man's job. So you got these young boys committing suicide. They cannot survive in their dynamics. There's a suppressor on the scene that is taking away those dynamics, making it hard for them to accomplish success and to be what they're created to be. God created us as a purpose, created man to go and kill the bacon and bring it home.
Well, created the woman. I certainly can agree with some of that. I won't agree with all of it. There are certainly pockets, large pockets, of folks who have that struggle, but there are certainly people who don't. And so I think it's important for us not to kind of make blanket statements that everybody is kind of going through this. And I don't think that was your intent, but I do think it's important for everyone to kind of have an understanding. Again, when we talk about suicide, you know, somebody has gotten to their lowest point, where they're willing to do something that's contraindicated to their own survival, right? To their own basic human instincts by taking their life. And that's something that I hope that we all can agree on. It is something that is, well, tragic, but it's something that we really need to kind of help people to repair and get that sense of self back, because it's not just, you know, the external factors, but there's also internal factors
that we have to consider. Let me chime in just real quick, because I understand to a degree what Sister Nicole is saying, and I'll tell you why. I just watched a documentary last night. It was Baldwin Fire Next Time. James Baldwin, thank you. And one of the things that he said that was so powerful was that he was saying that, you know, when we're children, we're playing, we're interacting and everything at a young age. And then he said at the age of five, as Sister Nicole was saying, at the age of five, we realize that we are not a part of this fabric of America. We realize that we're not white. We realize that we're not wealthy. We realize that we're not, we don't have privilege. And so, I mean, so to get a sense of self, that's very difficult to do when everything in the society, including the language, black is seen as negative, blackball you, blackmail you, angel food cake is black, and angel food cake is white and devil's food cake is black. So it's
I disagree with that because
this will be a good conversation.
Because at the end of the day, we have a responsibility to instill in our children some identity, some rich pride in our identity as African-Americans or blacks. It's our responsibility to do that. And I agree that the kind of overall system doesn't do us any favors, but we know that. And so then we have a responsibility to teach beyond what is taught in our mainstream institution. So it's not balanced. I certainly don't think everything is balanced. But it is our responsibility, it's my responsibility as a father, first and foremost, of a son, to make sure that I instill in him a sense of pride when it comes to his heritage, to his sense of identity, and cement his place in the world, wherever it is that he ultimately chooses to live. I cannot accept that, you know, because the system isn't built, you know, necessarily for us, that means we can't thrive in it. We absolutely can thrive in it. And everybody on this panel is proof of that, in my opinion.
I don't think anyone is saying that we cannot survive. Clearly, you know, we, as you mentioned, we are a testament, all of us, but we are collectively a testament to survival against the worst odds. But I think the point that's being made is not, it's the recognition that this isn't, that there is a power that is a force that is coming against us. That even though we have this inner drive, this inner power, this inner strength, this inner resolve to thrive and survive, there's still a force coming against us that causes friction. And those two forces that are opposing causes friction such that we become depressed, such that we become anxious, such that we can't determine our destiny in a way that we want to, because there are invisible glass ceilings and there are roadblocks that are in the way. But these are real issues that we struggle with, that we encounter, that no matter what has been instilled in me, it creates something in me that creates a struggle because I encounter it.
let me chime in on that one more time, because I just did a program. I'm sorry, Dr. McClure. Did you want to get in here? And then I'll go after you. Y'all got me one. I want to just take over. Y'all go ahead.
Yeah. So I look at it like this. You know, the more I mature in understanding of this, I recognize every culture, people, ethnicity, or nationality is born into a struggle somewhere. In the Western construct, our struggle is probably been more race. Somewhere else it becomes class. Somewhere else it becomes politics. Somewhere else it becomes tribal group. So there is always this dynamic of you know, the good and bad sorts that are at battle with each other. I'm thinking about what Dr. Marimba Ani talks about with the cultural asili, I believe A-S-I-L-I, where she's talking about the germinating matrix of every family, and also Edward Bruce Bynum speaks this. Every family has a cultural strength to it. And if you look at it, it goes back generation after generation after generation. I can look at my own family and find a theme right through the middle of the family. And if I hold on to that theme, then my identity can be found there. My strength can be found there. My resilience can be found there. Now, sure, racism is also going to be there. But for someone else that's living in China, where it may not be race, it's going to be nationality. There's always a human condition to overcome. So I recognize the racial dynamics here, and I recognize it's a part of the human condition. That doesn't mean I accept it. It just means I understand this dynamic is present in every single culture. So I think if we can look into the themes in our family systems, churches, religious organizations, there's something much deeper, much more ancient that we can tie ourselves to that takes us back to older ways of knowing, or the epistemologies that Dr. Swift is talking about, other ways of knowing that grounds us in spirit and truth and has kept us resilient because it kept our ancestors resilient 100 years ago and kept them resilient before they even came to this continent. So we're repeating this cycle over and over again, and we're always going to have something to battle. I think it's just our turn at bat. So, you know, it's kicking dirt off our cleats, you know, swinging the bat, because our parents swung, our grandparents swung, our great-grandparents swung, and the ones coming over on the slave ship, they also swung. But that's the condition. We're always swinging, and we're always looking to get to the next level. Tap back into those family systems to find out what that looks like.
I agree. I definitely agree with what you're saying. And I definitely agree with what you're saying, Dr. Melvin. Of course, I mean, I definitely agree. I just think that, you know, to a large degree, you know, anyway, as far as us educating our own children, you know, it's these things like education and health and other things that when we do strive to do these things and create our own institutions, they are attacked. They are vehemently attacked. So back in the 60s, you had Black Power, and then you had the COINTELPRO movement. Today, you have the Black Lives Matter, and our cry for being acknowledged as human beings still in 2021, we're still crying for these type of things. But I was one of the interviews that I had yesterday was on the experiments that were conducted on Black people since our feet touched the soils of America. There were experiments on slaves. There were experiments on Black women. We all know about the Tuskegee experiment. Many of us may not know about the experiments that were conducted on Black men in prison. And many of us may not know that even children were not even exempt, that they had paid Black mothers $125 to inject Black children to see if this drug would tamper their so-called propensity to be violent. So I think that you know, when we think about this society, we're not just in an ordinary society where we're struggling, a natural struggle. We are struggling against individuals who are literally trying to kill us. And I think that that's something that...
I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
And the history on those atrocities is, in my opinion, not even up to debate. Those are facts. Mm-hmm. Those things happen. I'm not debating those points. My point is, because the topic that we came to was suicide and severe depression, mm-hmm. Particularly in our youth today. And one of the things that I certainly have been seeing over the last eight to 10 years, is the rate of suicide, particularly among African Americans and Black youth, has increased. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not, you know, oh my God, it's horrible. Now, any death, in my opinion, is one too many. But we are certainly seeing that people in our culture are turning to the option of suicide or completing suicide or, you know, taking their own lives more so than they have in the past. And what are the reasons for that? And right. I think a lot of times the reasons kind of go back to that sense of, you know, not having an identity, not seeing a path forward, not having access to resources and whatnot. And just like our earlier guest, what I certainly want to convey to everybody is a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times there are resources around us that we simply don't access. Maybe because we don't know, maybe because we don't trust, maybe because we, you know, didn't want to convey to somebody that we need help. But the fact of the matter is that they are there. There are other resources or alternatives that our people have access to that don't just include taking your own lives. That was my point.
Yes, sir. Anyone else want to chime in? Because
Dr. Melvin.
Sorry,
I have a question. I know you've been looking. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I was wondering if you had any research which is talking about maybe an increase in the rates of suicide in the African-American community, but it causes me to reflect on when things were at their very worst in, right. In our culture with the treatment, everything that was listed. Pardon me for how I'm framing it. Why were we not doing it then? But, you know, where's that question? Why were we staying resilient? Why were we continuing to have children, continuing to move forward? And I don't know if we have that kind of research going back to the 1800s and 1700s, but I'm wondering, at least as the narrative might go, that we were not killing ourselves.
We
were under far worse.
I think this is, again, you know, I'm kind of laughing in my head, because I think we started talking about this in our previous last month's discussion. There is something that's different, in my opinion, today versus, let's just say, you know, 50 years ago. And I think it's around that support system and that family system that we talked about previously. Mental illness wasn't non-existent. People may have framed it a different way. People may have viewed it a different way or ignored it in some way. But it was certainly there. And we had that conversation about, you know, the uncle, the auntie, the, you know, brother, sister, you know, who's in the back room, or, you know, that people just say, hey, you know, that's just how they are. But that sense of support and sense of family and community, I think that is something that is severely damaged today for a number of reasons. Who do you turn to? Who do you trust? Who do you go to when, you know, families are separated? People are incarcerated. People have died. People
are quite frankly becoming parents sooner than probably one would think. And certainly one may have the ability to kind of understand, oh, okay, this is kind of, you know, our life journeys, our life process. This is what I instill. I think all that plays a factor. And just the other point to your question, Dr. McClure, certainly some of the things that I'm seeing within forensic settings shows that we start to see more people of color kind of take their own lives. And that's something that I've kind of seen again over the course of time that certainly gives me pause, if that answers your question.
Dr. Monique, yeah. I think your mic is, yes, there you go.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
You would think after what, a whole year of doing this, right?
It's all good.
Interesting question that Dr. Dwayne posed in regard to like, well, what, it's a great question to help us really kind of pick at what we're looking at now. Like, why didn't we see it then? When things, honestly, things are horrendous now for Black people in America, especially, but around the world. But, you know, my husband and I were talking about it earlier, like, no one's knocking on our door saying, send your daughter out right now, you know, at 5 o'clock. Right. No one is, you know, we're not seeing people, you know, being hung, pregnant women and somebody cutting their stomach open and stomping the baby's head, right? We're not seeing this level of terror and savagery that we were seeing then. Not to say things are better, but I'm just trying to make a point. Why did we not see the suicide rates that we're seeing today then, when things were so terrible, when things were so bad? I think part of that is what Dr. Hinton is talking about with the village, right? There was more of a connection that we had to one another. Yeah, we were struggling, but the bond that we had between each other, it supported us, it helped us, but also there was a notion that we've lost that is germane to the worldview of our traditional African way. And that is the idea of transcendence, being able to transcend what's happening physically. There was a unity between the physical world and the spiritual world, that we saw this on the same plane, that we saw a continuum between what is physical and what is spiritual. And so we were able to tap into this spirit part of ourselves to transcend our physical reality. That's something that we did then that we don't do now. We have lost, to a great degree, we have lost our spiritual base and sensibility. And so we no longer tap into that. Now, when life gets rough, we get pushed to a point of hopelessness and helplessness, right? Those are the two factors that they say precede suicide. When somebody gets suicidal, if you see indications of hopelessness and helplessness, those are two red flags that you really want to kind of look out for, right? And so if I feel hopeless, I don't think tomorrow is going to be any better. I feel helpless. I know that there's nothing I can do to change it, but what else do I have to live for? Well, if I had that spirit sensibility in me, I can transcend that. I can go higher than that, and I can envision deeper. And so I think that is one of the things that we've lost. Now, I want to just make one more point going back to what we were talking about before, which is, you know, when Dr. Hinton was talking about instilling identity that we as parents, that's important, and I fully agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I think this piece of suicide is why we really need to be ever aware of our open innocence. And that is because we get to the point of hopelessness and helplessness without the recognition that it is not our personal failure. We always think it's our personal failure. Mm-hmm. We are in some way deficient, that we are in some way, you know, just, you know, there's something wrong with us. That's why. And so I might as well just let it go and get this over with. But it's not that we are so deficient, it's that we are going uphill with boulders on our backs. That's why it feels so impossible. And so this is why it's so important for us to always be aware yes, instill the identity in your children and one another, but we always have to be aware that we have an open enemy among us that is always pushing us, that's causing us to experience the struggles that we're experiencing.
Can I chime in real quick? Sister Nicole, did you want to say something?
Yes, I just wanted
to go after you.
That was very powerful what Dr. Swift stated, because it is true. We have a vice germ that is here. Now, you're right, McClure, yes. Okay, you're so right too when you said that, you know, it is natural for a man to have to go through so many struggles to move to the next level and the next level and keep moving up. That's true. We were created to sustain struggles and to move up. The problem is that even with Martin Luther King, when he was going out trying to make it happen, there was a vice germ pushed back. There was something that's pushing back. Normally, a person is supposed to go out there and pursue their happiness, pursue their purpose, and make it happen. But when you have something that is chopping at, that is preventing that, now we take that towards our children. We know that it's normal to grow up, go to school. This is what you're told in this world. Grow up, go to school, go to college, get a job, and become something. Pursue your happiness. How many of our children are able to do that? When you look at, and I've been, when I taught in the school system, I taught in schools that was socioeconomics areas where they were really worse off. You got generation of children in bad areas. And it's not just starting, it's starting from grandmother and it's maybe even great-grandmother. But when you're in a world where all it is no accomplishment, no success, is downtime or struggles after struggles. We all know that struggles have to exist to make you come to the next level, but these children don't even see the next level. They stay stuck in one struggle, and it's be generation after generation to the point where you just feel like, what the purpose? If I don't know my purpose, I can't serve my purpose because God created us with a purpose, then why am I here? What purpose? I'm not serving anything. Why am I here? So then you get to that mental level. You're ready to just say, look, I can't do nothing else. You turn to drugs. You turn to alcohol. You start to go that route. Many of them go that route, you know. And then the ones who don't go that route, who has been trying to fight, but there's a vice germ there. You see, this is something that our children, yes, we got to teach them their identity, but we got to teach them the truth of their identity. They need to know the truth of who they are and the truth of what they're dealing with so they can know how to maneuver in this world. Our children is destroyed by the lack of knowledge. We already was destroyed. Now they're being twice or three times that destroyed because we don't even teach them. Right now, the school system make it seem like slavery was servants, not really slavery. They don't even teach them that it was a crime. They teach them as if this was our role in existence. So we have to start talking to them about the truth so they can see their enemy.
Let me chime in because I really like what everyone is saying. Let me do this. Okay. This is a juicy conversation. And I think we're still on point, though. I think we're still on point with both Martin Luther King and suicide. One of the things that I wanted to bring into the conversation was that before integration, it is said that 70% of our homes, and this is backing up what you're saying, Dr. Melvin, that kind of right, that before integration, 70% of our homes was a man, a woman, a child. I mean, it was the full package, if you will. After integration, 70% of the homes now headed by, and 70% or more now, headed by single-headed household, in most cases, the woman. And we all know that this is not by accident. This is not by accident. This is by design. And we all know that, you know, certain laws, for instance, that if you lived in the projects, that you weren't allowed to have the man in the home, the father in the home. This is a government policy. And so the answer, I think, has to be that we separate ourselves from this toxic system. It's a toxic system, and that during segregation we were faring better than we were during integration, so that we, if we pulled our resources, would be much better.
And we'll have to agree to disagree, because I don't agree with that, and I'm not going to. I agree that, again, full stop, you know, going, I think as Dr. Swift said, going uphill with boulders on our back, that's real. That's not fictional. That's real. But we are resilient, and we are able to overcome the most atrocious situations because we're that strong. I truly believe that. I also believe that we have the ability now to help folks who come from horrific socioeconomic conditions to see something else. One of the things I love saying to my patients is, you can't unsee some things, bad things or good things. And once you see that there is a world outside of your small pond, you see the ocean, you fly on a plane for the first time, you understand that there are other people in the world who not only look like you, but can thrive and do great things. That's powerful.
Right.
Powerful. And that's one way, one of the many steps that you have to take in order to achieve your wellness, to achieve that well-being, to combat that toxic culture and toxic environment that we're all talking about, that I think we all would agree fully exist. But I am not someone who thinks everything's got to be separated. I don't believe that.
So, well, let me say, if I can.
Yeah, no problem. Very, very, and we'll just round table discussion. So you go ahead.
I'll be real short.
You don't have to be short. Exactly.
I think one thing for sure, you know, you have to travel really out of the earth, and probably you'll find something else, some more there, in order to escape racism, right? Racism is in every corner of this world. We cannot, that's not something you can get on a plane and escape. It's there, it's present. But one thing for sure, to your point, was a point I wanted to make earlier, and thank you for bringing it back, Brother Muhammad. When left alone, if we are not under the oppression of our enemy, left alone, we have demonstrated, we started history, right? You can't go far back enough. There's us, pyramids, everything that this world has, it extracted from, we are the original people, right? Extracted from us. But even dialing forward and looking at us here, existing here in the United States, when left alone, we had a Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? When left alone, Rosewood. When left alone, what was that place in North Carolina? I was reading some about a year ago, there was a community there. What is it? I miss what you said.
Wilmington, North Carolina.
Is it Wilmington? Thriving.
And don't forget Central Park too.
I don't know about Central Park.
Yeah, if you get a chance, read about it. There was Central Park. There was a thriving Black community, and it's Central Park now.
Huh. Something to look into. So right. Bottom line, to just cut it short, if we are left alone, we flourish. God in us comes out. There's nothing we cannot do. The only reason why we are in the condition that we are in is because we are up against a wicked oppressor. That's it.
Go ahead, because I'm sorry. We keep on. You go right ahead.
No, go ahead if you want to.
I just wanted to say real quickly that, you know, I think the problem is that we are, as Black people right now, we're like that frog that's sitting in that water and the temperature is being turned up. We are resilient, but for how long? Because if you have Black women right now, which is the canary in the coal mine, if you have Black women who are dying in childbirth, and then you have Black children, this high maternity rate, that right there is a dangerous sign that this and Black women dying in childbirth is not poor Black women. This cuts across economic lines. So I think that that is a canary in the coal mine that says that we are like freshwater fish that have been dropped into salt water and we can't breathe.
Nicole, take us home.
That is powerful. you say very wonderful things. And I have to agree that separation is the only way, because as it's taught in Dianetics therapy, we're not going to be able to move forward as long as we have something that is suppressing us from moving forward as a people. Because yes, we are resilient. Yes, we are strong, powerful Black gods that was created for struggle, but also to rise to the epiphany of our existence. But we have not been able to do that because there has been something there that has been preventing us, literally is an enemy to us. Now, we know that an enemy is somebody who pretty much is trying to take your life if they're an enemy. The problem is not that they know that we're enemies and they treat us like it. We don't know that they're an enemy. That's where the problem lies. See, once we start knowing who our enemies are, and once our children start knowing who, it's not just because you know an enemy don't mean you have to go right out there and start killing them, but you will stand strong if they try to take your life. You're going to turn around and say, no, my life is important. Black lives does matter. And you're going to protect your life. You know what I'm saying? So we don't know our enemies. To this day, after everything that they do to us, they have made us not even know who they are. And it's not even the fact of them. It is the engrams that we carry in our mindset that creates a demonic circuit. That's demon circuits that it creates in our mindset that makes us think that our enemy's way of life is really our friends, is really okay. It creates what is called critical race theory, makes racism so normal across the board. It is so embedded in America that it is normal. And we have literally accepted it as being normal. So it's okay to go to a store and have a white person walk around and look at you. You're still going to buy there. It's okay if you see a Black woman get mistreated at a store and you're in line to order stuff. You're still going to stay there. Cops come get her. We've seen this on the videos. We've seen all of this stuff happen. We still don't do anything about it. That is not normal. You see, we're living in a world where, yes, we are resilient, but we're not living normal. It's not normal to see your own Black sister get beat down in a restaurant or in a nail shop, and then you just stand there and still stand in line to get some food. That's not normal. It is not normal to see your children get shot on the ground unarmed. That's not normal. So if it's not normal, we're not normal, but we're still living normal because we have given the control of our mindset to them to control it. And I think Minister Farrakhan says something like the person that directs your or controls your education.
Yeah, the diameter.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
That gives you the diameter of your knowledge, gives you the circumference of your activity.
Of your activities. And that's what's going on right now. Yes, we are progressing in their world, but we're progressing at what they want us to do, how they want us to progress, not how we're meant by God to progress.
Hopefully we can all come away from this conversation going, there is a knowledge and independence that we all have to kind of strive to achieve and make sure is known within our community.
Yes. And let me, we'll go around as we close out. I'll go ahead and make the first one and then we'll go around and we'll end with you, Dr. Melvin. So I think what we have to understand, number one, I just wanted to say that when we talk separation, we're not talking hate. We're not talking that we hate, you know, that they'll hate the white man. That's wasted energy. What we're literally talking about is being intelligent and surviving. We need to survive now. We can't continue to survive under this oppressive system. So I just wanted to say that when we talk separation, it's not that we're saying that we're hate. Like I think it was Fred Hampton. He said, white power for white people, black power for black people. So with that, I think that, you know, our children, as you all have said, you know, they need to see a bright future, as Dr. Swift was saying. You know, our children, they need to see hope. And I think at this point in time, with the Black Lives Matter movement and waking up as a child and seeing our people with the police officer with his foot literally killing a man, there's what other option do we have? That at some point there's going to be an explosion, but I won't go on. So we'll go to you, Dr. Swift, and Sister Nicole, Dr. McClure, and Dr. Melvin.
What comes to mind to me is something that an Indian writer wrote, is that it's no measure of health to be well adjusted to a severely sick world, something like that. And that's what comes to mind when I think about what we're trying to do. And I feel like that's the undertone of Dr. King's statement of integrating our people into a burning house. It's that we are trying to integrate with, we're trying to be like, we're trying to mimic, we're trying to meld into a severely sick society. And in so doing, we are becoming severely sick. The way of the European world is not our way. It's not our way. We have a different, as Dr. Duane talked about, we have a different epistemology, way of understanding and knowing things. We have a different axiology of where we value and how we relate to one another. We have a different worldview, a different way of seeing things logically.
That's right.
We are different people. And when we try to act other than who we are, we fail. We have to come back to our own and be ourselves. That's the only way we can survive. And if we have to separate to do that, then so be it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Swift. Sister Nicole.
So what comes to mind to me is when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that education is a torchlight to a civilization. And that is true. And that's where we fall at, because we have to ask the question, whose civilization are we living? Are we living our own civilization, or are we living the civilization of others? Because they have plans for us. I've always told my son that if you don't have a plan for yourself, someone else will. They have had plans for us since we've been here in America, and it has never been an equality level. Now, when we talk about separation, it ain't hate. It is separation for us to heal. It doesn't mean that it has to always be that way, but at least we will have parameters on how things will be conducted when we do come among and start integrating ourselves with other people. At least our children will be raised with the knowledge that they need to have to be equal, truly equal in this world. Because what they teach in the school system, I've been in it. It counts for nothing. Look at what our children are becoming when they get out of school. It's proven. So that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Dr. McClure.
I'll say that, so in this country, we've been enslaved longer than we've been free. But prior to enslavement, we were free longer than we were enslaved. Basically, we have a lot more history to into, and I believe that our culture has plenty of wealth. It has all the wealth that we need to solve these problems. All the cultural wealth. If you understood them as gold, diamonds, whatever it might be, that same gold and diamonds exists within our thinking and our ability to problem solve and find other ways of managing this place and space that we find ourselves in. I'm not sure exactly when it happens, but I try to work from a strength-based model of finding the deeper discourse that we need to have that's horizontal and shared amongst all of us, past the politics and religion of the moment and ideologies of the moment. There's something deeper. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And Dr. Melvin, you're going to bring us on home.
Yeah,
that balance.
I really, really appreciate the rich discussion and dialogue that we had tonight. I think for our audience, it is always okay to have dissenting opinions and to have disagreement, but we can continue, as you have seen here, to be cordial and certainly be open to others' thoughts and others' conceptualizations. I really like the thought Dr. McClure just left off with. We do have the ability to solve these problems, whatever way, ultimately, as a people, as a society, that we choose to solve it. We do have the tools to do that. We have the tools to see other things. We have the tools to understand not only our struggles, not only our history, but to understand that we do have purpose and we do have a way forward, even in this environment. I'll say it that way. And so I'm still hopeful about that. And I still think that for anyone out there struggling with how do you move forward, how do you cope with your illness, how do you get to a place of wellness, it can start with that support system, whether that is your family, whether that is your community, whether that is someone that's positive in your life. And it certainly starts with believing in yourself that there is a way forward, that it's not hopeless, that you're not worthless, that you're not helpless. I think that's the message that I want to make sure is delivered to our audience this evening.
Yes, sir. And so I knew Dr. Melvin would bring it home and encapsulate it all. And you're right, Dr. Melvin. I mean, this is a conversation that Black people need to have with each other. You know, it's not, you know, we shouldn't be afraid, as you were saying, to look at these different roads that we may want to think of traveling down for our survival and for our children's well-being. I want to thank each and every one of you, and I want to thank you, Dr. McClure, for bringing on that excellent guest. I mean, when we talked about PTSD, I mean, we'll have hopefully some future shows, because that's so deep. And as I think it's Dr. Joyce DeGruy talks about post-traumatic slave syndrome, we also as Black people just suffer PTSD from walking around in America. So for those who are watching, we want to continue to invite you to watch us every month. We do this every third Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. Definitely invite you to call in. And if you want to be a part of the program, as far as coming on the program, then join our Facebook group. That's Knowledge Cipher, Knowledge Cipher Conference Series. Just type in Knowledge Cipher Conference Series and join that Facebook group. And in that group, you will have the link and you can actually come on and join this conversation live. Or you can call in and we will put that number on the screen. So with that, I want to thank each and every one of you panelists for your excellent, excellent insight. I really enjoyed the conversation, even though for some of us radicals on this panel, but I really enjoyed the conversation, and I think that it's a healing process for us to come together as a family and to talk like this. So thank each and every one of you, and may God continue to bless you. And once again, I'm gonna try to do more than one thing at a time. So God bless you, and we will talk to each and every one of you here real soon, next month. God bless. Yeah.